you aren't making your money work hard enough if you continue to do these one-hit tech wonders, and most of them aren't hits.
This is Marketing Smarts, a podcast committed to helping you become a savvier marketing leader no matter your level. In each episode, we will dive into a relevant topic or challenge that marketing leaders are currently facing. We will also give you practical tools and applications that will help you put what you learn into practice today. And if you missed anything, don't worry. We put worksheets on our website that summarize the key points. Now, let's get to it.
Welcome to Marketing Smarts. I am Ann Candido.
And I am April Martini.
And today, we're continuing our Marketing Smarts mini-series all around the topic of the issues facing creative agencies today and how they need to evolve to stay relevant. This series brings together folks from both agency and corporate that all have different POVs on this topic, but all are experienced practitioners and thought leaders with decades of experience. Today, we welcome a very special guest, Jimmy Smith, founder and CEO of Amusement Park Entertainment, which creates 360-degree brand experiences through storytelling and compelling interactive technology. Now, Jimmy and I go way back. He is a big thinker, which is so important to have on your team to really push the limits of what is possible and shake out of complacency. Jimmy has worked on some of the most iconic brands in the world, including Gatorade, Nike, and JBL, in addition to cultivating partnerships with a long list of influential celebrities. In today's conversation, we cover specific topics, including what happens when we put some soul back into the ideas and innovation we work on, versus maybe being a bit lazy and making things very transactional. We talked about the brands that have been brave enough to go for creative ideas that have then stood the test of time and keep paying dividends for that brand. We all know clients and creative folks speak different languages, but with a bit of trust, we can find a common language and work together to create hit records versus one-hit wonders.
All right, Jimmy, welcome to the show, and please introduce yourself to our guests.
My name is Jimmy Smith, and how y'all doing? I'm the chairman, CEO, and chief creative officer of Amusement Park Entertainment.
Awesome. And with that, we will get into the issues facing creative agencies today and how they need to evolve to stay relevant. So, Jimmy, what we've been doing with all of our guests is kicking off by just talking to us about your experiences over the years in the creative industry, where you've been, what you've seen, top things you've worked on. Just introduce yourself overall to give the audience, because, you know, we're doing many of these, just a general understanding of who you are and what lens they should take your interview through.
Okay. I'm a Black man in America. My background started off in advertising. My first gig was at Burrell in Chicago, Burrell Communications. And that, for those who don't know, that's a multicultural ad agency that targets folks of color. And they've also broken out and done some dope general market stuff as well. But that's where I cut my teeth. That's where I learned through Tom Burrell, Alma Hopkins, Anna Morris, and Lewis Williams, my mentor. That's where I cut my teeth and learned everything that I practice today. I learned at home base there. And then I built upon that by going to Flaccone and Belding. It was called Flaccone and Belding back then. Worked for the great Al Hawkins. And that was also a brother over there. And he taught me a whole lot. From there, I went to Peck Sims Mueller in Hawaii. And yeah, I thought it was going to be cool, but it wasn't. That was like being a million miles away from home. And I'm never back. And from there, I got my big break. I went back to Burrell for about 6 months, but I got another big break from Joe Muse, the legendary Hall of Famer Joe Muse over at Muse Cordero Chin. And Muse, Black, Cordero, Mexican, Mavis Cordero, and David Chin, Chinese. So I would work on it. That was an experience and a good one because it set me up for doing international work, because I would be doing work for the Asian consumer market, the Latino market, and be transcreated into Spanish or whatever. And then we had a sliver of Nike, real small bit of Nike. And that gave me my springboard. And that was for the African-American market. And that gave me my springboard to get into Wieden & Kennedy. And I was at Wieden for over 10 years and did a whole bunch of stuff that, you know, folks thought was pretty cool. And some of that work is in the Smithsonian, the African American Museum, Smithsonian African American Museum of History and Culture. That was an experience because it taught me, I was always looking for a place where I could just do who I am and do what I do without worrying about whether it's too black, too white, whatever. It just is, as long as it worked with whatever sport you were promoting and for on Nike's behalf. So I helped convince LeBron to come there.
Awesome.
Although the heroes might have done more than what I said, but he came. Kobe, same thing with Kobe. From there, I went to work for, and I can't say enough about Dan Wyden, David Kennedy, John Jay, Susan Hoffman. It was like legend after legend after legend over there. From there, I went to work with another legend, David Lubars, at BBDO New York. And while in those two places, I was cutting my teeth on what would become today what amusement park entertainment is today, which is branded entertainment. So in both places, I was doing things outside of traditional advertising, TV shows, graphic novels, video games, all types of crazy stuff. And I actually helped launch the iPhone, although I'll never get any credit. Steve, obviously it was Steve Jobs' baby, but he was testing out whether people would want music on their phones, a bunch of music on their phones. So we launched the Motorola Rocker, and that Motorola Rocker was the first phone to have iTunes.
Oh, interesting.
And it made sense. You're going, well, why didn't he just do it himself? Well, that was his plan. His master plan all along was to bring the iPhone to the world. From there, worked with my other hero, Lee Clow. Went to Shiat Day, TBWA Shiat Day. Lee, I thought he was Asian. I'm from Muskegon, Michigan. So, what the hell did I know back in when I was first coming up. This is when I was coming up. I knew by then he wasn't, but but when I was coming up in the mid 80s, there was no internet, right? So I didn't know what he looked like. And Lee, being from Muskegon, Michigan, I'm going Lee Clow Shiat Day. There was no TBWA, it was just Shiat Day. And I'm thinking, that's an Asian agency in LA. That'd be cool. My wife's from there, so why don't we do that? But he hated my book back then, and fortunately he loved it by the time we got into the 2000s, and so he brought me on to head up Gatorade with him, and that's where we launched G. That's where we G'd up Gatorade. And so if whoever digs the G, I did that, and if you hate it, somebody else did it. And from there we I opened up Amusement Park Entertainment, which is a branded entertainment company. Branded entertainment, culture, technology, sports, and we've done some cool stuff. We had a guy jump out of a plane with no parachute, no wingsuit, from 5 miles up in the air where he couldn't even see the net, and that was for Stride Gum, and their tagline was mad intense. So they needed a mad intense event. So Bonnie and Bo and Laura Henderson, I call her L Boogie. But though Bonin approved it, greenlit it, and pushed it through and gave it to the Bulldog, Laura Henderson, L Boogie, and she got it through. And yeah, that won a Guinness Book of World Records.
I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
First of all. So hope everybody's listening. I don't think we have to say why you are on this particular series. But I do think, so a lot of what we're talking with folks about is kind of the iteration of what we've all experienced in the industry, right? And where things are now and where we think they're going to go. So I think with your unique purview and the experience you have and more of this experiential space is the way I say it. Talk to us about, what trends are you seeing or what's going well for the creative industry? What's not going so well? Just give us your point of view based on all your years that you have and where you are.
I guess what's not going so well, I think it started in, I know it started during the dot-com era. A lot of gimmicky things started popping up then, real gimmicky, new technology, we'll do this and we'll do that and we'll do this. And they don't have any soul to those ideas, right? They're just attaching, selling something like a new toy that they really don't understand what to do with. They haven't thought through. I'm talking about the agencies and the clients. And it's just something to get a quick wow, and then they're done, right? So they haven't had a chance. They've been lazy to like massage whatever that new tech can be, what it can be. You know, like TV commercials have had a lot of time for folks to, okay, we can do this with it, we can do that, we can present it, whatever it is, like this. And they've had a lot of time with TV commercials to give it a soul. And these new technologies are coming through so quickly, which is not a bad thing. Again, I'd say it's pretty much laziness of not saying, well, wait a minute now, this is not just something that's just here today, gone tomorrow. It's like, I remember back when hip hop first came and the media kept saying, oh, it's just a fad, it'll be here, it'll go away. It's like, well, a lot of these technologies, they're treating them like fads, like they're going to go away in 5 minutes, not even 15 minutes, 5 minutes, and they'll be done. Whereas no, machine learning is here to stay, and you should treat it with the respect that it deserves and what it can provide for the world and for your brands.
So how is that then changing the way, or how would you suggest then agencies think about technology and the evolution of technology in their day-to-day and how they're approaching the work or their clients?
Well, everything's so transactional. Stop making it so transactional. You're, you know, building on what I said earlier, they're mining something for a quick hit. They're trying to make a hit record as opposed to a hit album. Mm-hmm. That stands the test of time. And they say, well, and you know, a lot of stock prices and all that kind of stuff is what they're in Wall Street, what their minds are on. But Michael Jackson's Thriller ain't going anywhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see. Taylor Swift's records are so good that she remade them, redid it so she could have her own masters again. And when you're doing something great, it keeps giving over the course of time. It doesn't just did that, done. So one example is where I mentioned Heaven Sent. That's where the guy jumped out of a plane with no parachute, no wingsuit. We did that in 2016, and I don't know how many millions of views it has now, but it keeps growing. So it's still delivering for the brand, even though it was a 60-minute show on Fox and internationally was shown on YouTube as a pay-per-view event. It's still giving. So in other words, it's still selling, even though you haven't, you know, I don't know how many, like 50, 100 million. I don't know if you added up all of the views that it has, is off the charts. It's the same thing when you do something that stands the test of time. I can't tell you how many times I've seen Nike Freestyle. Somebody's greatest commercial of all time. It'd be on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, or whatever. Greatest. And you got kids actually still to this day doing the moves to it. Well, that's still selling the Nike brand. It's still an ad and it's still selling Nike. It was cool then, it's cool now, as opposed to something I do not remember or you guys don't remember. That so you aren't making your money work hard enough if you continue to do these one-hit tech wonders, and most of them aren't hits. I shouldn't even call them a one hit. The most of them, vast majority of them, are not hits.
Yeah, I mean, well, the brand lover and strategist in me loves to hear you say that, because I'm totally on the same, and I know, you know, we share that love mm-hmm. of brand on the same page. And this has been one of the threads of conversation with all the guests that we've had so far, is this whole short-term, knee-jerk, I need to be here now, I need to make my mark for my career, I need to show up on this channel. And so what do we do about that? Because I think we're all in agreement that that's a huge problem, and none of us want to see these brands go that way. I mean, the examples you give, right? It's because it's a brand-led execution. It holds the essence of what Stride or Nike is standing for and has always stood for. It's not just a stunt or something gimmicky that's out there, and that's why it continues to pay dividends for those companies.
You know, that's a Great question, because I mean, it's fallen into like American society. I mean, it's not just you know, a brand or a client or whatever. You look at the politicians and how they go about their business, and they don't believe in something, but that's going to get me the votes, so I'm gonna do that. All the while, they're just stabbing their brand. You know, when it goes down, and maybe they don't care about history, but when it goes down, many of them, not picking on Republicans, not picking on Democrats or whatever, on either side, that's not going to look well for you as time goes on. Well, same thing with your brand. I mean, how many of these brands are hurting? Like, hurting. And it's because of the selfish people they had working for them. And it's because of that upper echelon of management. Well, oh, you made a mistake. Well, I'm not going to be brave if you're going to ding the hell out of me because I tried something and it didn't work. That's not worth it. I have to feed my family. So it's like, and then the selfishness on the other end of is, I don't understand why the CEOs can't tell that whoever is running your marketing department doesn't care about your brand. It's pretty doggone obvious, right? And so for you to allow them to continue to do that, but it's not all doom and gloom. You look at Geico, their brand is super strong, you know, and how they go about their business is, they're the ones who started that whole thing of, okay, we got the Geico,
yep,
and then we're going to do this, the cavemen, and they were going to do that. They had multiple messages, but they all seemed to come from the same place.
Yeah.
Multiple avenues, roads to get to the same place to have you give you a good feeling about Geico. And I believe that's why they dominated. What's the Wizard of Wall Street? I mean, that's one of his companies, right? And he seems to roll like that with all of his businesses. He's looking at long term. And so how come folks don't connect the dots? You have the Wizard of Wall Street, who always thinks long term. You're thinking short term. How's that working for you? Not too well. And then the last thing on that, when you mine something, I don't care what it is, you're mining for gold, you're mining for diamonds, you're drilling for oil, right? Eventually that oil well dries up. Mm-hmm. If you don't put oil back into the, not that that's how it works, but if you don't put oil back into that oil well, if you don't put diamonds back into the diamond mine, it's going to dry up. And that's what they're doing. They're sucking their brand dry. So when you suck the brand dry, then yeah, you have to do a whole bunch of sales because your water is the same as this water. Your toothpaste is the same as that toothpaste. Your sneaker is the same as that. It doesn't freaking matter, right? Because you've sucked out all of the power, its superpowers. You sucked it out and made it so it's a transactional thing. So,
well, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. And I mean, you and I go back and we try to do some, you know, big things for some well-established brands at P&G that didn't quite get sold in, to a bit of our chagrin. But I think the point that you're saying about the short term is right on. But there's also an element about, well, there's two things. There's one is there's always seemed to be a playbook for some of these brands, right? So it's interesting that, you know, the Nikes of the world and the Stride Gums of the world will take a risk on something that could go either way, right? There's no guarantee about how it's going to show up, even if it's very well conceived. And sometimes they're not, you know, cheap executions, to be said. But then also there is an element of really trying to understand where this is going to go next, right? Because it may not just immediately turn into sales. Sometimes it's a build. And so there's a patience that's needed in order to kind of build and to take that and to go someplace else with it and to really have the mindset, that branded mindset of we're building something here. So I speak from my own frustration because I was really disappointed that we weren't able to sell something in, but you have been successful in getting established brands to kind of change up the playbook a little bit without, you know, selling your secret sauce or anything like that. But do you have any like insights or tips that you could share about how do you get these brands out of their own heads? Like, how do you get them to trust that, hey, we're going to try something different and, you know, we're going to be all in it together. Like, how do you get them to think that way?
I have no idea. I could end the sentence, end that question, answer right there. I have no idea what makes them buy what they buy. So when we present it, first of all, understand who you're presenting to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's your first thing. Don't waste your time. You know, the Bible says don't sell pearls to swine. Don't, if you understand who you're dealing with, they are not going to buy a big idea. It's just not going to happen. It's not in their nature, and you're wasting time, energy, and money trying to sell stuff. But I didn't know you were going to call Ann. I didn't know I was going to get an email from you. Yeah. And hey,
you didn't run.
I had no idea. And that would have been the farthest. My point is, I would have put P&G in the category of wasting my time.
Yeah,
before I knew you, right? I would have said, no, I'm not trying to present anything to P&G. It's a waste of time. And then you call. So I don't know. And then Bonin is always trying to do big things. Always, always, always. Bonin Bo, I'm talking about. Call him 3B, triple B. So when I took Heaven Sent to him, he was immediate. Like, yeah, let's do that. And I'm thinking we're going to do it for Tang, because Tang was, you know, that was the drink of astronauts, and it's big in Brazil and bigger in other countries. This idea wasn't necessarily had to be a U.S.-based idea. And it is owned by Mondelez, which owns Oreo Cookies, Chip Ahoy, and Cadbury. And so I knew he would dig it. And I'm thinking it'd be good for Tang. And I'd show it to him. I was at Advertising Week. He was on my panel. So after we got off the panel, I say, hey, Triple B, I want to show you something. And he brought on some of his co-workers and show it. We had a sizzle video. And he goes, whoa, this is great. I'm going, yes. Great for Tang, right? He goes, no, this would be good for Stride Gum.
Hmm. And you're like, huh?
what does Stride Gum got to do with... and kind of find out there they were changing the formula on the gum, and it was going to do cool stuff in your mouth, and so it was Mad Intense. So they needed a Mad Intense event to match up to bolster what they were saying about the gum. I had no way of knowing that. The one thing I would say is always be open, but zero in on the Ann's of the world, the Bonin's of the world, people that you know that know it's bigger than us. That's what we did for JBL with Damian Lillard. It's bigger than us. And so, and I haven't worked with you, April. So I'm sure if you're rolling with Ann, so there you go for everybody.
I'm in good company. Yeah. I make you cool.
But in terms of, there's one other thing, taking the, because you need it to work now, whatever you're doing, you want it to work now. And it amazes me that folks can't connect that building a brand sells. I'm not proposing doing something that doesn't sell work now. I'm just saying, get something, if you're paying all that money for it, don't you want it to work beyond today? What's wrong with it working over the course of years? So one example is when we did the Funk Andy Fackrell and I created this mythical ABA team. ABA was the American Basketball Association. So at one time there was the ABA and the NBA. And then eventually in 76, the NBA bought the ABA, or they merged. And that's why you have the San Antonio Spurs, the Denver Nuggets, and the Indiana Pacers, right? Mm-hmm. So
I didn't know that either. Interesting.
Yeah. So in same thing with the New Jersey Nets. So what we did was, is it New Jersey Nets or the New York Nets? Yeah, Brooklyn Nets. So Brooklyn Nets. It's the Brooklyn Nets now, but at the time, you know. So what we did, In 2002, for Nike, we created the mythical team called the Roswell Ray Guns, create the character, team logo, the whole nine, and cats like Vince Carter, Jermaine O'Neal, Baron Davis, I'm probably missing some folks, played on that ABA team, right? Paul Pierce is on there. So they played on that mythical ABA team, and we did the commercials. It was a three-part series. We had Bootsy Collins in it. He's like my uncle, Uncle Boot. was in it. It blew up. It did what it needed to do at that time. It was the follow-up to Nike Freestyle. Blew up. But it didn't stop there. So that's 2002. In 2020 and 21, I couldn't get him to do it in 2002. I tried to get him. Hey, man. They made a limited run of jerseys. But I wanted them to just release the jerseys, release this, release that, all with the Roswell Ray Gun logo on it. They didn't do it. But it did what it needed to do at that time. It was a massive hit. 20 years later, they did the jerseys, the shorts, the sweatpants, the sweat jackets, the hats, the basketballs, the shoes, and not just the shoes. They did the Air Force Ones. They did Kyrie shoes. They did Converse, got in onto the act and made Roswell sneakers and whatnot. 20 years later, that idea was still paying dividends, is my point. As opposed to something you did in 2002, it ran for a month or two and it was done and nobody talked about it. This one still paid off handsomely worldwide for Nike 20 years later. Why wouldn't you want those type of ideas? You're paying for them.
We would like to invite you to join Forthright Women, the cohort. This community is for females who are ambitious in their careers but want an equally fulfilling personal life. It can be quite a dilemma between what society tells us we should do and what we feel called to do. Sometimes it's even hard to distinguish between the two. This group is all about uncovering what may be holding us back, getting the tools, inspiration, and support we need to shift our perspective, and getting on the road to our visions. For more information and to join the group, check out forthright-women.com. Well, and that's another question or avenue of conversation is really making sure that, yes, you know, blip on the radar, one hit wonder, those type or not even type things, but also the actual building an entire experiential campaign versus just one experience. Because in your examples, right, mm-hmm. these things have legs because they're going beyond just, you know, the stride, drop out of the helicopter that day. You know, there's multiple videos and experiences, and the example you just gave about all the gear and all the different touch points. So can you talk a little bit about the value of that? Because I think that is something that agencies are struggling with, and the ones that aren't doing well are chasing more of these one project, one hit things versus taking a step back and working on the whole experience and that being brand led.
Let's see. It's not being brand led. You know, let's take Jesus. I'm looking over here at a sweatshirt I have. Is God is dope. And wouldn't you say that's the most brilliant advertising campaign in history? Now, I'm a believer, so I'm not disparaging Jesus. He is real. He is the real McCoy. But how it rolled out. Now, of course, they had the ultimate creative director. But how it rolled out. It's still talked about over 2,000 years later. And all of those things from the how they start off with, you know, the 12 disciples and grew that thing out from writing letters, okay? And it went from writing letters and going all over wherever they could by boat and foot and donkey and whatever and preaching the word and then doing a Bible. So you got the Bible. Where's the brand Bible? That's your brand Bible. When you read the Bible, New Testament, Old Testament, that's your brand Bible. And where is that for these brands? It's nonsensical stuff. And what happens is when the new guy or girl comes in, right, they throw out that brand Bible and there's a new brand Bible. Yep. So the one that you originally did didn't mean shit. Bible is the Bible is the Bible is the Bible. It's the same as it was over two. If you look at the Dead Sea Scrolls of the Jewish Bible, right? And which is in the Christian Bible is the Old Testament. That's essentially the same. So nothing's changed. So what they believed then about their God stayed, has remained the same. Sure, somebody take has a slightly different take, but if you read it, it's the same. It's not that way with brands. They're Coca-Cola is this, as when they did the new Coke thing. It's new Coke. It's this, that. It's this, that. There's no consistency in the vast majority of the brands. So I would say if I'm ahead of a brand, if it was good when Jessica came up with the brand Bible, if that was working, I'm making up a name, working in 1955, 65, 75, 85, 2005, if it was the bedrock of that work, you know, it's like if you go to a church, they don't sit up there. It's not the same as what it was back in 1965. They got the screens, right? They're beaming this in from over there and whatever. It's evolved, but the message is the same. I think that's the most critical thing with the brands. There's this thing with, check out Star Wars. What Lucas laid down in 77 works in 2024. And it's still, they got a whole line of movies that are coming out. Sure, it'll ebb and flow and whatever and whatnot. But the Mandalorian came out. Who is the Mandalorian? I remember how the story is the same. The concept, the brand book is still the same. And that I think that's the biggest thing to do is to keep, if it worked, keep it on point.
Well, I wasn't sure where you're going to take that because I thought you were going to tell me that Jesus had a best-selling book. So that's why he was successful.
And but, he does.
Well, but I like where you went with that. And I think, though, what, like, Jesus, and if we're going to use that metaphor and reality and for branding, but like you and others, you know, Bonnet and those people see is like they're big thinkers, mm-hmm. right? They have the ability to see how the pieces come together and how the pieces can then live on their own. And how do you build from that? Because I remember when we would like look at these ideas, you'd be like, and we could do this with it, and we could do this with it, and we could do this with it, and we could sell extra revenue through this. I'm like, so everything you said that actually occurred for some of these projects you work on is actually the way you think. But if you're not in the mindset that you can see the opportunity, all you see is that's a lot, that's going to cost a lot, that's going to take a lot. How do I do that? Right. So I do think it takes an element of big thinkers. And that's like a clear point that I'm bringing out because I think you're one of my favorite big thinkers of being able to have somebody who actually thinks that way, that stimulates the conversation, that can go to different places and that can see the opportunity, that can see all the different incremental streams that it can take to see what it might look like 20 years from now. So I think there's an element of that that's super important. So would you say that, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but would you say that this element of big thinking is something that, because I would say, is something that a lot of agencies have lost in favor of the quick turnaround stuff? And maybe why that the things that were being created now doesn't have the longevity, that doesn't have that ability to look back 10 years from now and be like, hey, we can use this again and we can reprise it. All of those, what would you say about that?
You know, what you're saying is absolutely true. And I think to bring back George Lucas, Star Wars into the conversation, you asked a question, I think it was you, April, or one of you asked it, how do you get them to buy these big ideas? Mm-hmm. You don't tell them everything it can be. unless you're dealing with somebody like you guys or Bonin, you and I just recently learned this. You don't tell them everything it can be because it just scrambles their brains. Like my wife Smoke is a numbers person. She can't write her way out of a paper bag. But if you give her some, she can't, and she'll tell you that. But if you give Smoke Einstein, it can be some Einstein problems, mathematical stuff. Oh man, it's like, and I'm looking, I do not know what you did and why that makes sense. And she'll go when we're doing the, she's the controller of the company. And when we're doing stuff and doing the numbers, and she'll say, well, how did you come up with that? So I don't know. It makes sense to me. I just, that's not the way you do that. And it works the same way. So my point is, we're asking, and I don't know what your background is, how you understood that. That was unique. That was special. Most people in your position, we're like two ships passing in the night. I'm saying da 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 da, and the brand folks are saying da da. In reality, we're saying the same thing. I just speak in my language. You know, I might be speaking Xhosa, and you're speaking French, but we're saying the same thing. You just write it out in the strategy. Brand folks write it out in the strategy, like April would. I'm writing it. I'm saying the same thing, but I'm writing it out in the idea. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And so if I'm saying, if we could trust each other and understand that, yes, I can't tell you how many times I've presented to somebody and they go, yeah, but we're supposed to do. And I said, yeah, that's what that does. What I just showed you is what you said in that paper. Nobody's going to read your paper. And consumer wise and go, yeah, that's it. Let me go buy that brand new television. It's got to be articulated in a way that inspires. And on the brand side, they seem to forget you aren't talking to robots. You're talking about to people who need to be inspired. And they think is that the creative person is just trying to win another award, which some of them are. But if you don't trust who you're working with, and it goes both ways. If you don't trust who you're working with, if I'm trusting that what you're writing on that paper, you that I can share with you all the things that it can be, like we did with you, Ann, that I can share with you and you'll get it and I don't have to hold back. You can get somewhere. So my point, but back to George Lucas. Lucas didn't tell 20th Century Fox everything that Star Wars could be. He just told him, hey, look, I'm going to take as I understand the story, I'm going to take normally my fee for directing is this, but I'm going to take less and you're going to turn over the rights to me in 10 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. You go ahead and make that thing, Georgie. We'll be fine. But he didn't tell him. And we know what happened once everything reverted back to him after 10 years. So I've been thinking, it depending on who I'm working with, if it's a Bonin, if it's an Ann, this is all that can be. This is what it can be, and we can roll and you'll get it. But if I'm dealing with somebody, I'm not trying to be mischievous or anything, but if I'm only going to scramble your brain by telling you what this can be, then I'm not helping you and I'm not helping ourselves by telling you all that because you aren't going to get it. Let me just tell you, it'll be a great 30-second spot.
Well, and I think it's such a good point. And, you know, this whole idea of really knowing the people you're working with is another thread that I think, and there's different reasons people have said why we've lost some of this, right? Some of it is we haven't been in person. You know, we're over camera. We don't get to actually see people's mannerisms. Or again, the idea of, you know, we're chasing the transactions or the immediate numbers and not thinking long term, all of those things. So what I'm hearing you say is that you really take maybe more time to get to know the people you're working with and what they're able to and will react to. What are their triggers? What are the things that they can understand and what motivates them? And so, again, not putting words in your mouth. That's my interpretation. But so how do you do that? How do you make sure that you, in this world where things are moving so fast and things are changing and people are chasing different things, how do you make sure you get to that?
I'm still learning and hopefully I'll always be learning. But on that same day that we presented to Bonin, I learned a whole lot. And that was like in 2014. He was on, like I said, he was on my panel. And I said, and I asked him that question, how do you, we got a bunch of creatives in the room. How do you get them to buy great ideas? And He goes, first of all, you got to understand they don't give a shit about your idea. I said, well, that makes sense. And then he said, and they don't give a shit about making money. I'm quoting. And they don't give a shit about making money. And that one blew me away because I thought that was the deal. As long as I can make you a whole bunch of money, we good. Mm-hmm. We're good. And when he said that, and that floored me. And then I experienced some things. One brand, we increased sales by 47%. It was JBL. We increased sales for JBL by 47% with the Dame Lillard Bigger Than Us music video for their headphones and speakers and what. And that information came from them, not me. And we never really worked with them again. And I'm like, we just increased your sales by 47. You don't want to keep doing that? So I said, well, Anand was right. He said that. He's like a prophet. And he said, what you have to do is find out what their business life cycle is. So if you got a cat that's about to retire in 5 years, she's not going to do anything. Nope. Nope, not doing anything. If you got a guy that is looking to leave and looking for, you know, to land his next big gig, he's going to do something. He's more likely to do something, right? Or if they're, and what type of person is it that's about to be promoted? They want to stay at the company and they want to be promoted. Do they want to do something big? Because that's going to, and you have to talk to them. You have to understand who it is. So while you're at Cannes, instead of just drinking the rosé, talk to the folks that you might be interested in working with, or when you're at South By, or when you're at Advertising Week, hang out with them and see where they're coming from on their business life cycle. And that can help you by no means 100%, but it works a lot better than you waiting on a call from Ann.
I think that's a really good lesson to learn too about networking, which a lot of times clients don't do either. They go to see and be seen and want people to engage with them, but they're not on the lookout for the next best agency or person that's going to help them shape and build their future, if it's self-reflected, or the future of their business in general, if they're looking for a contribution for their work and development plan and to move to the next level.
Can I build on that though, Ann?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you triggered it when you said what it can do for them. So if they are kind of selfish-ish and not brand, I can't tell you how many people got promotions off of the G campaign that we created for Gatorade, right?
Yeah.
On the brand side. I mean, those cats blew up to CEOs, global CMOs. They just rode that wave and are still riding that wave, something that was created back in 2009. So being on the lookout, just like what you said, Ann, at some of these events on who if you're... I don't operate that way. I'm trying to hook up the brand. I'm trying to hook. I'm weird that way. Take care of the brand. They'll take care of you. That's the way I roll. And oftentimes I think I care more about the brand than the whoever's on the client side. But if you are not of that ilk mindset, then yeah, look out there. Who's doing stuff that's blowing up and can get you wherever you're trying to go? Because doing these little things is not helping the brand. And I dare say, if you're trying to get from point A to point B, doing something big, and big doesn't mean like you spent $10 billion. I mean, a big idea, an idea like Just Do It that stands the test of time, right? That's going to get you from A to B a lot quicker than let me do this thing that maybe increase sales by 0.00000001%, maybe, as opposed to something that everybody's still talking about 10 years, 15 years, 50 years. So yeah, I did that. You did that? Hey, can you come over here and do that for us? Hey, can you come over? We'll make you to this or to that. So there you go.
Well, I think that's really well said, because I think it goes back to the trust factor. Because I think if you talk to a lot of these people about what they're working on, they're going to tell you it's going to be the next G. It's going to be the next, like, whatever that big thing is that they had in their head. And the reality of the situation is they don't know, mm-hmm. right? And they may not have the experience to say, yeah, it's going to be like this. And so it's a very arbitrary assessment of what the possible potential is or what the opportunity is. So again, I go back to why it's so important to have somebody who knows what a big idea looks like, how to execute a big idea, has done it before, versus talking to ourselves about thinking we're creating these ideas and being very proud of ourselves for another 30-second spot that looks like the same shit we've done over and over and over again, but we expect it, oh, this one didn't hit. Well, that's kind of shocking. That's kind of surprising. I mean, without going out on a tangent, I mean, I'll go back to the Super Bowl ads, which will be a nice segue to what I'm getting to here in a second, which is, hey, we don't know what to do. Let's tie some sort of purpose to it, or let's put some sort of celebrity into it, right? Which is, if we don't have any creative or clever ideas, we'll just do those two things. We'll let those two things ride. Now, I'll say your use of celebrity has probably been some of the smartest that I've ever seen. And your use of purpose has been some of the smartest I've ever seen. So how do you integrate these, like, quote unquote, flashy things, or being celebrity, or purpose driven, which seems to be everybody's, like, now moniker for how do we make ourselves a little bit more human? How do we make ourselves a little bit more warm? Or we're just going to tie it to some sort of purpose and we're going to go. What is your assessment of that situation? How do you do it in a way that is actually so authentic and so well done? And why, and how are other people getting it so wrong?
It goes, they're getting it so wrong because that's not what they do. So for instance, when I was at Wieden & Kennedy and we're working with Nike, I tell them, I don't know how to make a shoe. I don't have a clue. I don't know how to, you know, how that's going to work, how the design is going to work, or whatever, whatever, whatever. And I'm not going to try and tell you how to tinker. Tinker Hatfield is the legendary shoe designer over at Nike. Do your thing. Let me do my thing. And Tinker did. Tinker and the rest of them, they, by and large, they let me do my thing. Find, like, you, when you go to a doctor, you do your research, right? You go to the doctor, go see a specialist, and after you've done your research and you talk to people and they said, Dr. So-and-so is great, you aren't sitting up there telling Dr. Bombay how to do surgery. Yeah, you know, it's like that's what you do, dude. I'm my life is in your hands, and I trust that you're going to do it based off of the research. It's the same thing with brands. Like, who's doing what? Look, watch these podcasts, listen to these podcasts, read the articles. I know when I was coming up, I treated it like Kobe. Kobe would always research Elgin Baylor. Most people haven't heard of Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, so on, and Michael, obviously. And he'd incorporate that stuff into his game. When I was coming up, I would research Mr. Lee Clow, Dan White, and Tom McElligott, Susan Hoffman, whatever. So you should take this on if you're a brand person, should take this on. I'm going to do my research and find out who the legends are, why they're the legends. And I'm going to make a decision, and I'm getting that person or that agency and this and that and whatever, whatever. You do what you do. I do what I do. And we're good. Now, if it doesn't work, you fire them. I don't mean like you try something brave and it didn't work. Okay. Well, because nobody, you know, Tom Brady wasn't perfect in the Super Bowls. There's going to be mistakes. And if there aren't any mistakes, then you aren't pressing any, digging any new ground. And it's like, they didn't get to the moon on the first rocket ship. It took a minute to figure all that out. But if it's like not working to a large degree, let me go to the next person or the next agency and whatever and whatever and whatnot. That's what I would do. Because like I told you guys earlier, I'm never going to understand mathematics the way Smoke understands mathematics. So I'm not going to even try. When she says, no, we should do this because the numbers, this, that, whoop, whoop. Well, we're going to do that because that's what smoke does. And when it comes to the creative stuff, that's what I do. And I'm going to do my thing. So it still boils down to doing your research and then trusting whoever that is and then moving on, you know, when it's not working.
Again, it goes back to the theme, I think, of what we're having. It's like you need to go to the people who know what they're doing. So the reason why just throwing a celebrity in an ad or throwing a purpose, you know, tied to your business doesn't work is because the people who are doing it don't know what they're doing.
They are star effers, right? I love Alicia Keys. I think Alicia Keys is the bomb and she's awesome and Swiss Beats ought to die a happy man, right? That's her husband. But when Motorola made her the creative director, I think it was Motorola, it's like, that's not what she does. And I'm not saying that she can't do that. But if she could do that, that wouldn't have gone away in like 6 months or whatever the length of time it was. And it's not that people can't do things that are out of their wheelhouse. You know, we do a bunch of, I didn't know anything about jumping out of a plane, but did you choose Alicia because there's something that you knew that she could do that and be a chief creative officer or Motorola? Or did you choose it because I like her music?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how many celebs. Shaq is in a whole bunch of stuff and is like, what does Shaq got to do with that? And Shaq is awesome. Shaq is awesome. And he can be used in ways that would blow people's minds. They haven't scratched the surface. He actually, many celebrities do this stuff because they're getting paid, but it's fucking up their brand. Mm-hmm. It's screwing up that celebrity's personal brand with the ad that they're showing up in. Steph Curry hasn't had a great ad since, 1952, before he was born. And I can't say that. We did a dope one with him for JBL in 2015, I think it was. But in general, these celebrities and it's on both sides of the brand. Oh, I like Steph. Oh, I like Shaq. Oh, I like this person. Well, where is the connection to your brand? That's, you're going to pay them all this money. Don't you want that to work hard for your brand? And most of the time they don't. And they think people are stupid. I'm going to buy that because that person. Now, there are exceptions to the rule. Like at the height of Michael Jackson's powers, he could sell whatever he wanted to sell. There's only one person on the planet right now that is like that, and that's Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift can, you know, if she touches it, that thing, I'd recommend, I don't care if you're selling paper clips, sign Taylor Swift and you sell more paper clips. But by and large, the majority of, there needs to be a connection to the brand, rhyme and reason, why it makes sense. And that you should leave that to whoever your creative agency or whoever your creative is that you're working with to sort that out for you and then trust them. I remember this just happened. I won't say the name of the brand, but I recommended Bootsy. Mm-hmm. Well, I can say this part of it. I recommended Bootsy back in 2002 for Nike. And the first question was, yeah, but we're talking to 12 to 17 year olds. They don't know anything about Bootsy. And I explained why they should do it. And they listen, right? And which is the hallmark of when I was working there, what Nike did. They did listen. Well, I just brought it up to somebody else. And I said, well, you should use Bootsy for this. And they said, yeah, but we're talking to, and this is not Nike. This is totally different brand. Yeah, but our market, he's too old for our target market. I said, you sound just like, you must have been a fly on the wall in 2002. Well, you know, so a smart creative is going to recommend if a celebrity is needed at all. And that's an art in turning somebody into a celebrity who is not, it's even more valuable if you can turn somebody into a celebrity before they become celebrity. And what makes them a celebrity is your brand. And I'll get that to the minute. Well, yeah. So like the lady from Progressive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Become famous based on what the Gecko. Who gave a rat's ass about the Gecko? And they made turn the Gecko into something. The caveman. We can go on and on. The man your man should smell like. He wasn't famous for Old Spice. And the last example is Dos Equis. I still don't know why they got rid of that campaign. That just boggles my mind. I couldn't tell you one Dos Equis commercial right now. I don't know. But I can tell you what they did when they had the man, the most interesting man in the world. I can tell you what that was. Yeah, and that's a process of being lazy. You know, I like this person's music and let me get them. So it's art. It's an art. It's not science. It's artistry.
All right. Well, we have covered the gamut in this conversation today. And I think we've covered all angles again with the different aspects of your experience, Jimmy, and just the lens of where's the industry going and where should it be going and what do we have to watch out for and change as we go?
Both from a client side and an agency side.
Client and agency.
That was really great.
Yeah. So before we let you go, we switch gears a little bit. We like to do a couple quick fires and we haven't told you what these are, but just so our guests get to know you personally a little bit in, 30 seconds or a minute, call it. So the first one here is, we were just talking about celebrities, right? So your favorite celebrity that you've worked with and why?
Now, April, there have been a ton of celebrities and for the most part, they've all been dope. There's only been a couple of knuckleheads. So it would have been better question would have been, who is the knucklehead that you would nincompoop that you would never want to work with again?
You really want me to ask you that?
Oh, I was going to say, and you could ask me that and I wouldn't answer that question. There's one, and I'm going to probably leave somebody off, but Tiffany Haddish.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Is a friend of mine, and we haven't worked together yet. We're working on stuff, trying to get stuff off the ground. And she's the biggest celebrity, A-list. She's an A-lister that acts like a Z-lister, meaning she's just down to earth. And even though she doesn't hold it against you, if something doesn't work, if that, we went to this client and that client and those knuckleheads didn't do it, she's cool. She's awesome. Bootsy Collins is on the male side is that way. He's just, hey Jimmy, what you want to do? he's just cool like that. And then Damian Lillard, what he did with JBL with Bigger Than Us, and this is coming on the heels of Mike Brown being murdered and a lot of blacks being murdered by police officers. And whereas many celebrities, one in particular, were running away from that, oh, now's not the right time to talk about that. Now's not the right time. He didn't give a rat's ass. He's going to lay it down and tell the truth. And he did that in that song, Bigger Than Us. And I could never thank him enough for that. Kevin Garnett would come to the set and, okay, do you want me to read it like this? Or do you want me to read it like this? It's like, whereas many of them, not all of them, but many of them will come, have no clue as to what you want to do. What don't even know what the ad is. We go on and on about a bunch of those folks. Yeah, many of them are dope. The vast majority, the horror stories that you hear about them, just celebrities in general, most of them are fucking awesome.
All right. What's your biggest hobby outside of work?
Smoke accuses me of working nonstop. So that's really hard because if I'm going to the movies, an idea is going to pop up while I'm sitting reading the comic book. Hanging out with the family, hanging out with Smoke, hanging out with the grandkids. That's the most fun stuff.
And called the grandkids one.
Yeah, I said he was going to say the grandkids. Very proud of those grandkids.
Yep, right. I got a third one on the way too. So.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
Yep.
All right, last one. If you could only eat one thing for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Corn dogs. Corn dogs.
Right like that. He didn't even have to think about that.
only reason I don't eat them is because they aren't healthy. But if they were healthy, I'd eat them every single day. I kind of hate the day, despise the day that I realize, oh, these aren't too healthy. But yeah, organic hot dog, or organic cornmeal cooked in coconut oil. See, I got it all down with organic ketchup. Game over.
All right. Well, this has been awesome, Jimmy. So before we let you go, tell people where to find you if they want to continue the conversation and hear more. I mean, this could go on for days, right? So no shortage there. Let people know where they can find you.
People just know they know somebody that knows somebody that hits me, but basically just email me. You probably should email D. D would be the best person to email. D@amusementparkent.com. DEE@amusementparkent.com. Also, get the Truth graphic novel. Go to Amazon and get the Truth graphic novel. And just look up Jimmy Smith and Nolan Woodard. Nolan, N-O-L-A-N, and Woodard, W-O-O-D-A-R-D. And Nolan is a big-time Marvel artist now. I discovered him fresh out of school back in 1999. And he illustrated my graphic novel. And now he's blown up and does, I think he's doing some Star Wars stuff, Spider-Man stuff. He's
awesome.
But anyway, if you look up that, The Truth graphic novel, Nolan Woodard, Jimmy Smith, you'll find that on Amazon.
This has been an exceptionally insightful conversation. We want to thank Jimmy for being one of our experts in the Marketing Smarts Creative Series, the issues facing creative agencies today and how they need to evolve to stay relevant.
We hope that coming out of this conversation, all of you listeners take action on the insights we've discussed today to make your agency client partnerships stronger and more meaningful, as well as be honest with yourselves and clean up where cleanup is needed. We can all change the industry for the better this way. Be on the lookout or listen for other episodes in this series. And if you have particular thoughts or feedback, we'd love to hear from you as always. And with that, we will say, go and exercise your marketing smarts. Still need help in growing your marketing smarts? Contact us through our website, forthright-people.com. We can help you become a savvier marketer through coaching or training you and your team or doing the work on your behalf. Please also help us grow the podcast by rating and reviewing on your player of choice and sharing with at least one person. Now, go show off your marketing smarts.